ours is under attack. Time has come, we're gonna take it back. Just gonna wait and see. Don't tread on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by. Watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Time has come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land, from sea to sea. Don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends, gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I'll dance your fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back into the show. This is the second hour of Your Defending Fathers with Trucker Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network with a severe cold this morning. Joining us on the line for our history lesson discussion today, Pastor Chatfield, you want to talk about the causes of World War One?
Correct. Man, you do sound pretty bad, Randy.
Yeah, I'm trying to struggle through it.
I got it. Okay, World War One. The first really world war as it started and it proliferated, it became known afterward as the Great War. It was not known as World War One until World War Two, and then when World War Two was over, in the midst of World War Two, then we started calling the Great War. Started calling it World War One, just so you know. It wasn't like, wow, we're in World War One. It wasn't known as that. It was known as the Great War. Let me give you the causes, kind of an overview, and as much time as we have before the first break, and then we'll dig deeper in this second section. Okay, the spark of the war. Now, this is really not the cause of the war. In a way, it is. It was the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand. He was the crown prince of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, which what I just said, the Austrian-Hungarian Empire is a study in of itself. When you look at a European map now, there is no Austrian-Hungarian Empire. You've got Austria, you have the Czech Republic, you have Slovakia, Romania, Bulgaria, Serbia, Herzegovina. I'm doing this because I teach geography too. Montenegro, Slovenia. You have all these countries. Before World War One, it was controlled by the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. And it's kind of ironic. And this is kind of counterintuitive, but it's true. When you have a strong central authority that keeps everybody under their thumb, you're less likely to have internal problems. But there was a... Within the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, the Serbians and others, they wanted independence. The Serbians had already had it, but they were on the border of Austria-Hungary. And lots of those, the Romanians and the Hungarians, they wanted independence. But when the crown prince was assassinated by a Serbian, the Serbians were allied with Russia. The Austrian-Hungarians were aligned with newly created a new country in Europe, which was Germany, which I'll kind of address that too. and I've mentioned this on this show here. My specialty is more American history, but this is what drew us in. Germany didn't even become a country until 1871. Before that, it was made up of a number of German states, the largest of which was Prussia. And but a guy named Otto von Bismarck, through his maneuvering, was able to unite all the German-speaking people in that part of the world, which in medieval times is known as the Holy Roman Empire. There you go. We're going way back. But he was able to unite Germany into one country. They were aligned with the Austrian Empire. And when this Archduke, when he's assassinated, boom, the thing blows up. We'll talk about it on the other side.
Sounds good. Short break. Word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Rainey for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week and serving breakfast Saturdays and Sundays. You can order online anytime for takeout, curbside, and delivery at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against the health department by subscribing to our podcast at fuelcasttv.com.
This is Kevin Kievsky, and I'm running for the Republican nomination for Michigan Attorney General. Our Second Amendment rights are under attack, and as Attorney General, I'll make constitutional carry a reality and defend your Second Amendment freedoms. No more permits for law-abiding citizens to exercise the rights and protect their families. I've stood up for liberty. Now stand with me to make Michigan red again. Endorse me at the March Convention and safeguard our Constitution. Paid for by Kevin Kievsky for Michigan, kevin4mi.com.
4,747 dollars. 4,747. That's how much, on average, each Michigan family will save annually with Perry Johnson as our governor. 4,747. Perry is Michigan's renowned quality expert and mathematician. He helped save the Detroit auto industry by improving efficiency and now can save our state. Perry says we start by eliminating waste and cutting 2 cents of every dollar of discretionary spending. No more state income tax. More money in your pockets. Perry wants you to keep your money and live your dreams. So your choice is one more career politician or Perry Johnson, who'll shake up the system and send you the savings. 4,747. Perry Johnson.
I'm Perry Johnson. And I approve this message. Paid for by Perry Johnson for Governor.
Road Trip, the Good Words Book for Success by Rick Randall, is the perfect book that will change the way that you think and will positively impact your life. 123 good words, motivational, inspirational definitions, and packed with very cool poems for each word, is a readable experience that you will visit time and time again. Available on Amazon Books and Barnes & Noble. Road Trip, Likely to Succeed, makes the perfect graduation gift. Enjoy reading Road Trip, Likely to Succeed A to Z, the Good Words Book for Success by Rick Randall.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. I support this show, and I would like to offer you our biggest discounts for listening. So please go to our website, MyPillow.com, and put in the promo code at the end of this message to get the biggest discounts. Again, thanks for listening, and God bless.
Thanks, Mike. Folks, go to MyPillow.com and enter the promo code TRUCKERRANDY, or call 800-654-9659.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back into the show. Second segment of our history lesson discussion with Pastor Chatfield regarding World War One, and like you said, it was initially the Great War and didn't become World War One until we had World War Two. But it is amazing how much that map has changed compared to the way it was back then.
Right. And here's something. This is my own personal thing. Back when I first started teaching in 1979, geography, it was easier. Why was it easier? Because you had a Yugoslavian. There was a dictator named Tito. And a lot of the Balkan countries of, for those that aren't great at geography, think of Italy. Then across that Adriatic Sea are the Balkans. And that was controlled by the Yugoslavians. And that was, but there were a lot of ethnic groups within Yugoslavia. And because Tito was a communist dictator, you know, they had relative peace because you had no freedom to organize yourselves. But the Bosnians, the Serbians hadn't gotten along in forever. And a lot of those Bosnian countries did not, could not get along. Some of them were Eastern Orthodox religion. Some of them were Muslims. Some of them were Roman Catholics. So there was religious differences. There were ethnic differences. There were nationalists. People wanted their own country, which is a part of the human condition. We want our own country. Now, when I'm way ahead now, but when the Iron Curtain fell, then we get all these new countries, and the kids don't like it because they have to memorize all the countries and capitals. And there's a lot of them in that Balkan region. But let's go back to before World War One. So you have the Serbians, which borders on the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, that they were Slavic people, S-L-A-V-I-C, Slavs, like the Russians. And there was a similar Eastern Orthodox, Russian Orthodox religion, and they were friendly with the Russians. So when this Serbian assassinates the Archduke, the crown prince of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, Austria-Hungary demands, you know, a letter of apology and all sorts of things that Serbia could not accept. And they started to appeal to the Russians, saying, it looks like that Austria is going to invade us. And so because the Russians and the Serbs were allied and friendly, Russia started to mobilize its military. Now, Russia had been and was at this particular time, now this was before communism, this is just a little bit before the communist revolution, right? The Tsar was still in power, Nicholas II, I think. He starts to mobilize, but the Russians were aligned with France and Britain, especially France. France and Russia had been aligned since 1894. France was a natural enemy to the Germans because they went to war in the Franco-Prussian War, back 1871, 72. And there's a strip of land, Alsace-Lorraine, in between France and Germany that they've been arguing over, fighting over for a long time. It's a mixture of French-speaking people and German-speaking people. Both countries claimed it, and Germany had it at this time. France wanted it back, and Russia, which was bordering on Germany. By the way, you know, Poland was not even yet in existence yet. I mean, there were a lot of Polish-speaking people in eastern Germany, western Russia. They wanted their own country. Poland's come in and out of existence throughout world history. There was Polish people, and they spoke Polish. So this is complicated. But France, Britain, and Russia were in this alliance. We call that the Triple Entente. So when Austria is threatening Serbia, Serbia appeals to Russia. Russia begins to prepare for war, or at least mobilizes. When that happens, Austria is mobilizing, and they appeal to Germany, and they begin to mobilize. And the Germans had it out for the French and for the Russians. Now, the island nation further west, Great Britain, it had been, you know, the queen of the seas since 1588 and the defeat of the Spanish Armada. But Germany had been really building up their navy and was openly saying, you know, we want a rival. Great Britain and the people of Great Britain and the nation of Great Britain, they didn't like it. So there was this arms race between the British and the Germans on the seas, and Britain wanted to maintain their power, their superiority on the sea. And so all these things are happening. Once this Archduke Francis Ferdinand is assassinated, everybody's in these competing alliances. Now, by the way, further south and east, you had the what we call used to call the Ottoman Empire. That was modern-day Turkey and the Middle East, and they had a natural affinity with Germany, and they didn't like the Russians. And so so you have the three main powers on each side, the Triple Entente, France, Britain, and Russia, the Triple Alliance, or the Central Powers, Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Italy. And they're all kind of aligned. Italy was not as dogmatic at this, but they began to be. When the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand happens, then next thing you know, everybody is now preparing for war. And then when the war starts on a smaller scale between Austria, Hungary, and Serbia, Russia jumps in, Germany jumps in, France jumps in. Then Great Britain didn't jump in initially, but then they jump in. And then all the other smaller countries jump in, because everybody's got to have a big, got to be a part of the alliance, or you're going to get swallowed up. So on the one hand, you form alliances to try to, you know, protect yourself and to stay out of a war, I suppose. But in this case, the alliances themselves helped cause the war. Plus, this is a time, remember we talked last time or a couple weeks ago about imperialism. Everybody wanted to expand their power. And there is, always has been, a certain just a nationalism or hyper-nationalism. And when you wanted your country to be the biggest and greatest on the block. We're talking about this in class. I'll just give you this as an illustration. We're talking about this in class. And about a year ago, we talked about this on your show. Remember when the United States was playing the Canadians in a hockey game, and just supposedly a friendly game, it was in Canada, and the national anthem was played. They play both, you know, the Canadian national anthem and the Star Spangled Banner. When the Star Spangled Banner was played, the Canadian crowd just started booing loudly. Now, I've heard people say, well, it wasn't all of them, but it was enough that everybody heard it. Half the crowd, two-thirds, one-third, I don't know. But just as the puck was dropped for the opening face-off, what happened? The hockey players got in a fight. The Americans didn't like it, and they thought that that was an insult. Now, the Canadians, evidently, so they claim, were booing because they didn't like President Trump's trade policies, you know, and slapping tariffs on them. But, you know, there's within all of us this nationalistic fervor. When somebody boos your national anthem, they didn't even have the respect to do that. The American hockey players, the gloves were off immediately, and there were three fights in the first, like, 90 seconds of the game. There were a lot of fighting in that. And to this day, the relations between the Canadians and the Americans, it's not great. It's more strained than it's been in my lifetime. And President Trump says things like, you know, Canada has to have us. They can't protect themselves, or things in so many words as that. And while it may or may not be true, Canadians don't like it. And then the Canadians start saying things. And just recently, President Trump has said, made comments concerning the Gordie Howe Bridge, the new bridge that they're building across the Detroit River from Detroit to Windsor, and saying, if you don't change your trade policy, I'm not going to let that bridge open up, or something to that effect. Yeah. And the Canadians are all up in arms over it, and some Americans are. Hey, well, wait a minute. We need this bridge. Now, whether or not we need the bridge, how much we need the bridge, I don't really know. But I can know that a Canadian, whether you're 50 million or 340 million people, you have a nationalistic love of your country. And when the British people saw the Germans before World War I really building up their navy and saying, we're going to challenge Great Britain for masteries of the seas. I mean, people started saying, whoa, 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 no, we're the masters of the sea. And so this nationalism turns into kind of a hyper-nationalism. And in the Balkans, especially the Balkans, again, that's territory of Europe across the Adriatic Sea from Italy, a bunch of smaller countries, they wanted independence. And Europe was said to have been, and rightly so, a powder keg. And when this Archduke Francis Ferdinand was assassinated, it was a thing that had our nations beginning to prepare for war. And, war came.
Now, on that point, do you think that is there any way possible that that war could have been avoided? Is there anything before the war started, past Chatfield, that could have changed the direction, or was it inevitable it was going to happen?
Okay, it's a good question. You always look back and you think everything's inevitable. I don't really know, but I'll tell you this. In July of 1914, there was an attempt of having some sort of diplomatic resolution to the thing. Part of the issue, it seems to me, everybody understands European history better than me, and there's a lot that do, I'm sure. The Austrians put such demands on the Serbians, and Serbia couldn't do that. They're not going to say, "Oh, this is we get where I." Serbia didn't really have a part of it, although it was a Serbian that did it. But Serbia could not give in to the demands of Austria, and Russia didn't want them to because Russia was the protector of Serbia. So the Serbians were on a part of the Triple Entente. And so, and there was a breakdown of communications and talking. And at the time, you know, people, you ever heard the song we sing when Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That is an anti-war song, really. What do you mean it's anti-war? It's talking about war. Before war, but even the Civil War, our Civil War is the same. People think, oh, we're going off to war and you know, when we finally entered World War I in 1917, I mean, we had a song, you know, over there, send the word to beware, over
oh,
there,
yeah.
that the
yep.
Yanks. Okay, so we have these songs, and it stirs up human emotion and nationalism, and there was no stopping it at this point. And everybody was prepared for war, and everybody thought that they were going to win, and there's some sort of real a drama and romance in war that you think we're going to often win a great victory. And then you find out in the first few months of World War I, and I'm not really talking about the war itself, but it was fought. It was a war of movement, but eventually it was a war in trenches and millions of people died. War is not a pleasant thing. It's not. People died, and World War I was awful. I mean, any war is awful when people die, but I mean, you had hundreds of miles of trenches and men living in trenches for weeks and months, yes, even years at a time. And it was a bad deal. War is bad. So could it have been avoided? I don't know.
Yeah, very good. Perfect spot for a break. Bottom of the hour news. We'll be right back.